Welcome to another episode of Dimes and Dozens. We were going to be joined by one of my absolute favorite people later in the show. Not even that much later. We don't have a whole ton to talk about at the top of the show today. But before we get to Sirit, who's, again, amazing, and like we can't believe we got her as a guest. We're so excited. Just one thing that was kind of note in the league this week. LaMarcus Aldridge kind of shocked everyone by retiring.
Apparently
he's been dealing with heart issues since his rookie year, and they kind of, you know, he's had them under control, and then all of a sudden they got scary for him, and so he retired, which is just crazy. He was only been with the Nets for a few weeks, and yeah, that was just like a really unexpected plot twist.
I think a lot of us were excited for him to you know, chase a title, and to be a part of it. Be a part of this whole thing, because he's been sort of an interesting character in the NBA, where he's like sort of a reliable big, but never really like causes, like makes a splash. We don't really talk about him ever. But I think we're all sort of silently rooting for him. And so it was shocking. It's sad.
Yeah. But I also feel really guilty for calling him like a lumbering slow, like
did you
making
say that?
Fun of him for his pace. I did, because when we were talking about before the trade deadline, we were talking about like who should sign him,
right?
And you were like, he's still good on defense or whatever, and I was like, is he? because he's just been like so slow and like cumbersome, but apparently that's because he has a heart condition. So I'm an asshole.
I've had him sort of crystallized as a Blazer. So like when he went to the Spurs, I kind of fell off with him, but
yeah,
I was really invested in his career as a Trailblazer, and I don't know. He's one of those people where you don't realize, I guess, the sort of attachment you have to him, where he's retiring, and
yeah.
I was like, oh, I wish him the best. Like, you know, good for him for...
Yeah, it's just weird. I don't...
Taking care of himself.
And he's one of those people where it's like, you don't really remember a time before he was in the league at this point. You know, it's just like a given.
Yeah.
He's just one of those guys that, you know, like has been played for teams that I would say are like good to excellent, but still for whatever reason, like nothing quite clicked for a championship. And it's funny because when I knew we were going to be talking about him today, I was like, wait, did he win a championship with the Spurs? And when you Google, does LaMarcus, the rest of the sentence automatically autofills as have an NBA championship. And then if you go to Google, it's like, or no, has LaMarcus, and then it goes Aldridge won an NBA championship. And then when you go to Google, it just says, you know how Google has the sort of like shorthand answer at the beginning, and then it shows you the results. The Google answer just literally says in enormous font, no, comma, zero, which is just so harsh and
so
messy.
Disrespectful.
It's like, did you really have to get that messy, Google? No one asked you for your input.
The results are interesting because I was just Googling him as well. And what I found was LaMarcus Aldridge, one of his generation's unluckiest and most underappreciated NBA superstars.
I don't know if I'd go that far. That's pretty
unluckiest.
Yeah, I feel like unluckiest, maybe like Grant Hill was pretty unlucky. Boogie Cousins has been terribly unlucky.
Yeah.
With injuries. God.
I always forget that Boogie Cousins is not 36. He's literally like...
Right. He's just literally been like irreparably injured every year of his career pretty much. So, no, I mean, I would say there's definitely several unluckier people.
Yeah.
And also several more underrated people. I don't think he's like at the very tippy top of either of those lists.
Chicago Bull who should not be named. The former Chicago Bull who should not be named. Pretty unlucky. You know, Merrick Mose.
Merrick Mose.
Merrick Mose
sounds like a discarded character from the Dukes of Hazzard or something. Like,
he
we gotta
like...
go over to Merrick Mose's farm. And
So
now we're gonna bring on a guest that I am so excited about. I like can't believe she said yes to doing this podcast. I'm still waiting for her to realize that it's a horrible mistake and bail and change her mind. She's one of my absolute favorite NBA writers, but also one of my absolute favorite people. She's incredible. She's so smart and so funny and just a gem of a human, and going to make me and Tolliver both look really dumb in the best way possible, and I can't wait. Sirit Sohi is here. Did I say your name right? And if not, I'll plug it in again.
You did great. That was lovely. Thank you so much.
So this season has been a little bit of a clusterfuck, mm-hmm. as far as like injuries go and COVID goes. And there was Fred VanVleet, you know, Canada's own. Mm-hmm. You as a Canadian resident, you know, you can stake claim to this tiny, very talented man. He said, this is a quote from him recently. It says, "To be honest, this is probably the most unpure year of basketball I've ever been a part of. Just from the whole league and rushing the season back, it's pretty much all about business this year on every level. It's hard to hide it now." And so I was wondering, like, what you thought about this season versus the bubble season, and like if you agree with that, or like how you feel about how this season was handled.
Well, shout out Freddie, first of all, for just being the most honest human being of all time. Oh yeah, like always. Yeah, I think he's right. I think it's really obvious, right? I think we all feel it. It's very strange. I have like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of dissonance watching this season, because there's obviously a lot of crappy things have had to happen in order to make it happen. Even watching Celtics Warriors, Jason Tatum going off after basically, you know, a couple games after saying that he had to use an inhaler for the first time after getting COVID-19, was just, I don't know, it feels, I mean, I think everybody that's watching right now feels a little bit icky about it, but at the same time, like, I'll be honest, I think I can relate with a lot of people when I say I'm straight up just not having a good time right now, and basketball is, like, literally the only anchor in my life, so it's like, they're putting on this thing that has been very helpful to me personally, in that like 5 o'clock hits and like, gosh, just some sort of variation in the day, like something that I don't know is going to happen. And that's been really, really lovely. But I don't know. He's obviously right. It's such a strange season. I've been kind of just trying to look at it like, I just take every day as like its own little silo. Like I'm not even trying to make predictions about anything anymore. Like there's no analysis that you can do that will, you know, cover the fact that somebody could just be out for like 10 straight days for no reason, right? Well, not no reason, but you know, just totally. No logic to it in terms of like, you know, could you see this coming? It sucks, and like there's so many injuries, although apparently the NBA is saying that there are the same amount of injuries as usual. I don't believe that. I also just think that some of the injuries
No, that's bullshit. Is, like,
more relevant players and stuff. Yeah, it's strange. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's strange. Freddie's right. It feels weird. I also feel very guilty for how much I've enjoyed it and how like amazing it's
right.
My own
that's what's so
personal mental health
it.
Like Steph going on right now is like one of the few healthy available players who also just like has my heart completely forever. It's just, you know, it's nice. It's nice, but it's not at the same time, you know.
That's it in a nutshell. I do feel like, you know, it's sort of almost like a microcosm of like just life in general, where it's just like there's these things that bring you joy and you're like, I know that in the underbelly of these things, like there's probably something deeply immoral at play. But also I love a paper towel. I love a fucking paper. I love to clean up a mess with a paper towel, or like I love, you know what I mean? I love to drive to like a grocery store that's 5 blocks away so I don't have to walk with my groceries back to my house. Like, yes, these things are like deeply immoral and wrong, but also like sometimes you just got to take the L's where they come and just do the best you can, you know? As a viewer, fuck Adam Silver for like being so irresponsible, but as a viewer, I'm going to like take the enjoyment where it's available to me, even though I know in my heart that it's wrong, deeply morally wrong. But you know, you just gotta like,
I mean, that's why they're putting it on.
It was a hard year, man.
Yeah, I really appreciate y'all saying that, because I've had a sort of lonely time with this season, because you know, I watch the games and like I have my big editing setup or whatever, and I watch the games to my left the entire time, and it just hasn't felt, I haven't felt that joy from the season that I feel like from basketball from growing up in Chicago. I'm from the south side of Chicago. I grew up with Michael Jordan. Like, I grew up, like, you know, with the whole fucking thing. And it's just been such a bummer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There have been a few fleeting moments of, like, of joy. Like that Luka shot.
Oh, yes.
Like that buzzer beater. I mean, there's just like those moments where you're just like, oh, yeah, basketball is amazing yeah. and wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I remember last season or like during the playoffs when you missed Luka's game winner and I was like texting you like, Luka, all caps.
You bring that up every episode and it tortures me. I fucking hate it so much. I was on the set of a music video for the game winner in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So
that's a good reason.
I missed the game winner against the Clippers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just Tolliver will never let me live it down or forget it because he brings it up literally every episode.
But literally the joy of seeing Luka's game winner and Sirit, I read your article that you wrote about like Steph Curry's magic and like Luka's, you know, about the possibilities of like joy in the game of basketball, and it really touched me. And so I just was like really excited by that, and I kind of wanted you to elaborate on it in the podcast, you know. About that article,
thank you.
Like, what, you know, what it meant to you, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just found that there was more of a logic to what happened than I think people were really giving it credit for. Obviously, it was a lucky shot, right? And I actually wish I remembered this when I wrote it. But Luka has hit a running three to win a game before. Like, I think it was a really big EuroLeague game. Might even have been the championship.
Yeah.
Don't take my word for it. You can probably look it up. But, yeah, like, he's done this before. He kind of hits crazy shots. And he has, like, a level of concentration and touch that most people don't. He also, you know, he grew up, in Europe, where they just value that stuff more. And also watching a bunch of players that did take long shots and like were very skilled. So it's only natural that his game would be an evolution on that. Right. Like to me, he's like this combination of Steph and LeBron sometimes where it's like, he just has obviously the playmaking ability and the strength, but like just has incredible touch and like, is just very bold about the shots that he'll take. And like, he does practice them and stuff. And like, you know, he likes trick shots and that's just like, I actually got to play basketball that day before watching that game. So I think I just felt like very, I don't know, just inspired, I guess. It was the first time I had played, you know, like since it's, I don't even remember, you know, like it's been so long since you've been able to do stuff like that. And it was just fun. And like, you know, just like taking dumb shots and seeing if they go in is like the whole point. Like that is just basketball, like at its purest, coolest form. Like just, like I wrote like, you know, Kids in Black Tops. Like I'd literally just seen that, like, you know, a couple hours before, just like, you know, like 12 year olds, 14 year olds, just, you know, trying stuff that, and like airballing, obviously, right? Because that's what happens when you're 12.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it eventually can lead to something, and like, man, like. I don't know. He's just like him and Steph both. And like, there's definitely other players in the league that like embody this as well. Or just like, they're just having so much fun when they're playing and they like literally look like kids when they play. And I just find that to be so fun.
I know. Yeah. I heard a Rick Carlisle quote about after the game from his post game presser. They were asking about that Luka shot. And he was just like, when the ball is in his hands, he believes that anything is possible. Like, he believes that it's going to go in, and it doesn't matter where he's taking it from. And I'm like, what is more? We've talked about this at length, Tolliver, like, just sort of people being Debbie Downers and, like, party poopers and, like, being like, oh, but, like, the, you know, like, the, I don't know, efficiency of that shot or whatever. But it's, like, literally, when the ball is in his hands, he believes anything is possible. Like, what more magic could you ask for from a sport? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we want when we watch sports, is like, we want someone who just believes it's possible, because that's why, that's what sets like professional athletes apart from who we are, right? Is that they're just like these mythical creatures who like believe in magic and can make magic happen. Like, I think that's like, so that's kind of like you were saying, like, that's what basketball is, right? That's like the essence of what makes it cool, is just these like impossible things becoming possible.
And straight up, just like, I hope I'm not making it like too hood or whatever, but like, I, you know, this was like our entire lives in the South Side of Chicago was like basketball and shit like that. And so I grew up with this sort of feeling of like, basketball is the magic, gospel music is the magic, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so when Luca does something like this, you know, it hits you in a place that becomes more ethereal than you even imagined.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was going to ask on the topic of Luca. So people have sort of regarded him as like the future of the league. And that's kind of a narrative. Do you feel that way? And if not, like, who do you think is the future of the league?
He's one of them, right? I don't know. Yeah. I think there is... He definitely has, like, the branding capacity to become, like, one of the faces, for sure. And he's so fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I think he's very captivating in that, like, as soon as he gets to a stage where, like, the Mavericks end up, you know, being in the second round, third round and stuff, like, yeah, it's... I think that's going to just naturally end up taking off. But I don't even know. Like, I think these things in the NBA actually happen, like, fortunately and unfortunately, like, more organically than they often do in other sports, because, like, the NBA just hasn't marketed any of its young stars at all, really, in any real effective way. Like, the story, like, it's just, I don't know. I feel like there's so many guys that I just don't know enough about. I think Devin Booker is definitely another guy that, since like, people just need to find out about these people, you know, like, he's so good. Like, I think kind of like has like a throwback touch too, where like he's borrowed so much of his game from Kobe, and like, he's exciting, and like, kind of has that similar sort of self-belief and skill that I think it's like super enticing. But man, like, I don't know, like, it totally just depends on how deep you go, and like, these moments kind of just make themselves. But like, I don't know, I just feel like there's so many young players in the league that we should know more about. Like, one of the, this is, I don't know if this is like even like on the right, like, what do you think happens to the league after LeBron James retires? Because like, you can see it right now, and like, luckily Steph is kind of picking up the slack right now, just being as fantastic as he is. But there was that period before Steph started going off and LeBron was out where it was just like no one knew what to focus on. And like, it got to a place where, like, Claire, you're a Lakers fan, right?
I'm a LeBron diehard, like, would drop myself in front of a train for him fan. So
oh my God, same.
He's played for the Lakers, and I live in Los Angeles. So, like, I'm a Lakers fan by proxy, basically, because I moved to LA around the same time that LeBron moved to LA. And so, but I would just die for LeBron James, and that's pretty much the long and short of it.
I want to point out, like, I was watching you on somebody's podcast, and me just like an interview, and you were talking about Devin Booker and Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. And I have been standing Chris Paul in this podcast for maybe the entirity we've had it. And I used to hate Chris Paul, blah, blah, blah. But my point is, y'all were kind of talking about who's more like undervalued on that team, because the Suns are what, like, the second or third best team in the NBA. Between Devin Booker and Chris Paul, who do you think is more undervalued? I need to know.
More undervalued. I think Devin's definitely more undervalued, because people just don't really pay attention to how good he is. He's so good. Like, I just wanted, like, we're just gonna do 5 minutes on Devin Booker here. Okay. Dude comes into the league, he immediately overplays his, like, his value, right? Like, he was doing, like, Ray Allen shit in Kentucky, and then gets to the league, and it's clear that he has way more skill than anybody gave him credit for, and was, like, a better, more versatile scorer off the bat, right? And then gets an early cosign, and I think this actually matters, gets an early cosign from a lot of players and people that, like, just kind of, like, I think, like, understand greatness. Canada Tie. Wore, when Drake did his concert in Phoenix the year that he was wearing, like, every jersey possible, wore a Devin Booker jersey at a time when, like, a lot of people didn't really know how good Devin Booker was. And I feel like you saw, like, LeBron James give him, like, the early cosign. He was doing it even back then. This year, when Booker didn't make the All-Star game, LeBron goes out of his way to tweet that Devin Booker is the most underrated player in the NBA, whilst, by the way, being like really good, really, really tight with Chris Paul. So I think we know how LeBron James feels about this question, even though, you know, I'm sure he can, you know, he can speak to Chris's greatness as well. But you had a whole bunch of years where everyone's talking about, like, okay, like, is he just like a, you know, just getting a lot of points on a bad team? Which to me has always been like, the if you're efficient and that's happening, like, that's just the most bullshit argument, because really, like, if you're on a bad team, you shouldn't be scoring at all, because all the energy is going towards defending you. And that's how it's been with him for years and years, honestly. Like, he just gets trapped so much and still does Devin Booker things. And then it was like, okay, is, but can he defend? Which, he's playing on the Phoenix Suns, guys. Like, it's like in their DNA to not be dedicated to defense. Like, from, like, it's in their epigenetic code, man. Like, it's not even like that iteration of the Suns. It's like every iteration of the Suns before that. And they're not even good. This year,
yes,
they're good. And he's playing better defense than pretty much, like, almost every high-level scorer superstar in the NBA. Like, I saw a thing a little while ago. It was like, hey, would you rather have Jason Tatum or Devin Booker? And I think last year you could have made the argument of, like, well, Tatum's better on defense. I don't even think you can make that argument this year. Like, he's so good defensively. Yeah, no. He's, like, talking. He's so good, man. He's so good. And he's the reason they were good in the bubble. He's the biggest reason they're good right now. Like, Chris Paul is great, but you know what? Like, he didn't have a player like Devin Booker last year, and OKC was a first round out that, you know, made the playoffs, yeah, which barely. Like, yeah, they, yeah, barely made the playoffs. And I don't know, man. He has every indicator. And I think I actually put, like, so much more weight into, like, all these dudes that come in, they come into Phoenix, and every single superstar is like, yeah, Devin Booker is that dude. Like, Chris Paul wanted to go and play with Devin Booker. They sometimes see things that we just don't. And, like, it goes back to, like, you know, people say, like, well, who's the hardest player to defend? I think we see this, like, Rudy Gobert right now, right? Like, every NBA player right now is kind of going out of their way to say that Rudy Gobert can't really defend.
Yeah.
And, like,
I know, it's
not, I don't think that's true. I think there is, like, a level at which they just, yeah, like, there's a level at which people, like, I feel like just don't like Rudy, but I do think it's something that you need to, like, kind of pay attention to when, like, all these guys are kind of coming together and saying the thing, to the point where, like, Dorian Finney-Smith, of all people, like, who are you, man?
Right.
Is going out his way to be like, yeah, as soon as they put Rudy Gobert on me, I knew I was going to put 20 on him. Like, yo, man, like, that is, he is making role players so much more confident than they ever should be. And then I think the game after, once
that. The swagginess of that quote, like, the ratio of swag of quote to, like, entitlement of player, like, the gulf between those things, has there ever been a bigger gulf, like, between being, like, a Finney Smith level player and then saying to the guy who's been defensive player of the year for, like, 3 years running or whatever, just being like, oh, that motherfucker can't guard me, like, that's just like, levels of swag. It's just
it's amazing. And then a couple games after the Dallas game, I think players started to just, like, almost overrate this idea of him being bad on defense. Because then the Thunder, who do drive a lot, but the Thunder, he hung 7 blocks on the Thunder. And it was, like, it was because, like, Lu Dort was driving on him too much. And I love Lu Dort. I think I love Lu Dort more than anybody in the NBA. And it was really funny to watch. Like, now you've got all of these players that are like, hey, let me just drive into the lane on Rudy Gobert. Apparently he sucks. And I think if you're gonna do that, then you're gonna make him good again. Like, you're just, like, approaching things the wrong way. But it's really interesting. Yes. Like, every once in a while, like, you have these stories that every player seems to co-sign. And when that happens, I just think, like, you gotta start looking at it.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I think we've gotten to the game portion of the show, mm-hmm. which is my personal favorite portion. We like to play a game here that you can't win or lose. So keep that in mind. But okay. It's a very unique, original game that has never been played anywhere else before, and it is called
Defend
the
Tweet.
Oh no!
Okay.
Oh no!
So basically, we just pull up old tweets of yours, and it's less defend. Although some of these you might have to defend, but it's less defend and more just like extrapolate on, I guess,
yeah,
or like expound on.
Okay.
Explain other EX words potentially. So the first tweet I have here is actually from September. I pulled this tweet because I relate to it deeply, as we kind of alluded to earlier. But it's like that meme of the girl explaining something to her mom on the couch, and the mom is looking at her like dead-eyed. And the caption that Sirat did was me trying to explain to my friends how important LeBron James is to me. It's so relatable for me. I love him so much.
Me too. I think so. As we discussed earlier, still cry every time I watch the block. Last 4 minutes of the NBA Finals, like those YouTube videos are just like my favorite thing to go down. I think Nike killed the commercial on that. Like, just really like hit me exactly where it would hit. Just me in particular. I feel like LeBron James was like lab designed for my feelings. He's just like, he's one of the few. I actually wrote about this like a month ago or something, I think, but I think everything I write was a month ago, but it probably wasn't. It's really interesting to watch him right now covering the NBA, because everyone else that I watched growing up has retired. Like, they're doing other things. Or they're just like not at a place where like they're that relevant to the NBA conversation anymore. But LeBron is still LeBron, and it's very strange because, like, you know, I'm supposed to be objective, which, like, that's bullshit. Like, no one is. And like, I choose not to be. But it's
respect.
It's strange. Yeah. I just don't get that. It's like, why do this? You know, like, why do this? And then be like, it's sports. It's supposed to be fun. Like, everybody who covers the NBA like got into it because they're like some sort of diehard, and then you're supposed to like get in all of a sudden, like you don't have feelings or thoughts. Like, I don't know. Anyway. I really just like feel something when I watch him. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, I feel something when I see you, you know, like, that's it. Like, that's just like, that's all.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he's like, there's one of the few stories that it's like, I see you. But
Phoebe Bridgers. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Our girl, yes. Big sad energy.
We love Phoebe. We love Phoebe.
We stand to you. Yesterday was like finally the first day in a month where I didn't listen to a Phoebe Bridgers song, and it was like, oh, I feel happier. So maybe I should do that. But
yeah, that speaks highly of your the direction, the trajectory of your mental health. If you could go a day without listening to
exactly,
Phoebe Bridgers, I feel like that says good things.
The weather is getting better. It's like, you know, I feel like she's more of a winter vibe. You know, like, just
yeah,
it's like is, too yeah. nice Definitely. Of a day to be listening to Punisher, you know, it just didn't feel right.
Oh, not Punisher. No, when the day, yeah, that's Punisher.
No, keep going.
When she goes, when the day seeps in, and I, when she said, I do speed for nothing, and yeah. I, you know, Phoebe. Sorry, I'm just singing the song Punisher.
You're a dead ringer. I would have thought that was Phoebe Bridgers here as a guest on the podcast. I never would have known that it was you, Tyler.
Thanks, y'all. I really appreciate that because that was a stretch for me.
I love the part of that song where she just says, like, it's like there's like a pause in the music, and then she just says, like, and here everyone knows you're the way to my heart. There's just like something about that line that just like crushes. And I think I actually feel like the same way about really great athletes like doing great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like I've been going down like a lot of YouTube wormholes lately. Lately being like, you know, since YouTube was invented, it was just like, I'd say like over the last 5 years or so, I've been
just lately,
but like, I like watching like these old, like just guitar solos and stuff, and like, you know, people like really in their bag, and they're like doing this thing. It's like they have the hot hand, but the music version of it, you know, it's like watching Steph.
Yeah.
When like there's this John Mayer cover of Promises, and like you get to like the last minute of it, and it's just like, this is just, he knows that. I'll throw it on Twitter, but he knows that he's doing something that he's not used to doing, and he's just in it, and the people around know it, and like everyone's watching it, and like you're just appreciating like this level that this person is getting to. And there's a great moment in it where I think the guy playing, I think he was probably like, I think it was a guy playing keyboard for him, like he gets in the camera shot a little bit, and he's just like, he just looks up at him, and then he just like smiles, and he's just like, you know what, I just need to do my job so that this guy can have his moment, and we can all be part of this moment. And like, those are like the best sports moments. And I've just had so many of those moments with LeBron that like, every time he does something good, I feel like all of that stuff almost rushes back. Like, it gets more and more concentrated on, honestly. And it's just like, at this point, it's just stupefying that he's still doing this. Like, there just shouldn't be this type of run of greatness from an athlete. Like, you do see in other fields, but you just don't see it in sports. And it's just like, I don't know, it's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does segue into our next tweet, which is, do I really like Steph, or does he just remind me of being 22?
Yo, you guys are like going into the feelings today, man. Oh my gosh.
We went deep.
Yeah. We went deep. It was a deep dive.
Well, let's be real, guys. Like, wasn't 2016, like, pre-Trump, like, the last time that life was good, honestly?
Yes, 1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah, like, that's all it is, man. Like, I just feel like that was a great summer for music, great summer for a lot of things. Like, I was doing nothing.
I just feel like I've aged 20 years since then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like,
so much.
I feel like every day I'm aging 20 years.
Yeah. So that's a sad note that tweet is about. I was doing absolutely nothing at the time. I just graduated. I was, like, just freelancing and, like, basically, like, just sitting at home having no responsibilities other than my job, which was writing about basketball part-time. So, you know.
Sounds pretty sick.
It was a good time, man. It was a good time.
I have a kind of a hot button, recent hot button topic tweet, but your tweet was from a year ago. So it's a very prescient tweet, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this tweet is from April 2020, and it says, Paul Pierce was born to be a retired basketball player. Incredible tweet.
I think I tweeted that when they were doing the horse thing. Do you remember?
Oh my god.
I did that? Oh my gosh. Yes, I totally forgot that happened. I blocked that out of my memory. But yeah, during the NBA virtual horse tournament, which was just an unmitigated disaster. Although there were parts of it that I did enjoy. Also, you know, I don't know. It was funny, like, watching it. It was just. But Paul Pierce, I don't remember what he was doing specifically anymore, but, like, he just had this, like, old man at the Y energy, and he was, like, I think his son was rebounding for him, and he just, like, didn't, like, he wasn't doing great with, like, the technology that they had, but he's just always, like, had that vibe. Like, he loves hating on players that played at the same time as him.
Yeah.
And, like, he's definitely just, like, he's definitely using the media pulpit as just a way to protect his own legacy. But in his case, it's just so transparent that everyone knows what he's doing. And it comes on top of the fact that, like, I love Paul Pierce when he was playing. But a lot of people didn't. And when you're that disliked as a player and, like, your first foray into media is just, like, you know, hating on Dwayne Wade, who is clearly a better player than yeah. you in every facet and is more accomplished, and saying that, like, you know, you would have done the exact same things as him if you were in his position. Just not going to work. Not going to work. I think people are going to read that play pretty easily. Yeah. But he's always been that guy. Like, he's like, he has to be his own advocate, because people just don't, like, identify with his game that much. And I actually, like, there's a part of me that really, like, I respect that, because a lot of guys are like, you know, they're just like, they have a natural appeal to them. And Paul Pierce is the polar opposite of that in almost every possible way. And no, which is, you know, really yeah. no fault of his own, honestly. Like, it sounds like I wrote when he had his retirement ceremony, and, like, even that, right? Like, it was like there was a whole thing about, like, you know, he didn't want to do it the same night as Isaiah coming back to Boston. Like, he didn't want to be overshadowed. And then people were like, come on, man. Like, and then, like, you know, during that whole time, like, you know, Draymond's doing, like, the, like, they don't love you like Kobe thing, which is, like, it's just kind of true. Like, that was, like, the hard part about all of those things is that they are correct. And he yeah. wants to be respected on that level. So he has to be out, like, he has to go out and do it himself. But the thing is, when you do that kind of thing yourself, it just makes it worse, because it makes it obvious that no one else is doing it for you. So I wrote a column about how Paul Pierce is not cool. And, like, I think it's kind of cool that he's not cool. But that got a little bit misinterpreted, like I was hating on Paul Pierce, which I'm not. I'm not. I really like yeah. watching Paul Pierce.
It was actually very, like, you were honoring him in a way that people just didn't.
Yeah, like, it's just who he was, man. He's like a gritty player.
Yeah. He reminds me of uncles. He has, like, a very strong uncle energy. Like, black uncle, you know?
Uncle Paul.
Uncle Paul. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have another tweet. I'm ready. Are you ready? Okay. Yes. I was thinking I would listen to Doris Burke doing the play-by-play on my day-to-day life. And then I realized I wouldn't be able to deal with the scathing, right-in-the-moment honesty about my repeated mistakes.
So true. So true. Very yeah. relatable tweet.
Doris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just looking Doris. At my unmade bed right now. I feel
it's like Tolliver, your mom is called three
life
times.
My life outside of this frame right now is just like, oh, gosh. Like, not, yeah. I think that one's pretty self-explanatory.
I feel like, can anyone do a good Doris Burke? I can't. I want to be like, hey.
Oh, God, no.
I'm not even going to try. Mm-hmm. We tried Phoebe before. We tried Doris, honestly.
Can I bravely bomb a Doris Burke?
That's on you if you want to. Yeah.
Doris.
Yeah.
Okay. Tolliver.
Do it, actually. You know what? How about?
So bad.
I'll turn my screen, and then you can actually just try to do the play-by-play on my life right now.
Okay.
Which?
Oh, wow. I would love that. Let's do it.
Wait, right should here. I do play-by-play and you do Doris color commentary? I'll be like Ryan Rucco or whatever his name is, and you'll be Doris Burke. Yeah? Should we try it?
Sira, did you even sleep in this bed tonight? I feel like she put a lot of work into her life generally, but completely forgot to...
Oh, we got the Coke bottle in the corner, and the Coke bottle's in the corner. We got the pillow on the left side of the bed. It is on the left side of the bed, and we are in the bed right now. I was not born to do play-by-play.
I don't understand. I don't know what the pattern of this blanket is. It seems like you rolled up both sides of the blanket into a
waiting on the ref. We're waiting on the ref to confirm with the caucus if that is indeed a Coke bottle. It's kind of, it's a little bit, it's a it little, was, what do you think, Doris? Do you think that's a Coke bottle?
I don't want to be too judgmental, but I got to say, it's definitely not a Pepsi bottle.
Why do you sound like fucking, like, Bob Barker or something now? That is not Doris.
Listen, you can't, I put myself out there on this podcast to do a Doris Burke impression. You got to roll with me here. You know what I'm saying?
You're right. You're right. You can't say no in improv.
Who else is doing a Doris Burke? It's got to be a yes. Yeah, no, and
you've really cornered the market on shitty Doris Burke impersonations. It's true. That's all you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, I have the next tweet ready whenever you guys are ready.
Okay, we're ready. Uh-huh.
this is a tweet that's near and dear to my heart as someone who has now solidified my status as the villain of the Paul George lovers universe. Mm-hmm. Here we go. It's the meme where it's like two guys shaking hands or whatever with like big muscles. And the tweet that Sierra is kind of complicated to explain without visuals, but the tweet that she was quote tweeting was Mark Stein saying, Paul George in his first media session of the season, I want to retire a Clipper. So that's what she's referencing. And then the meme that she made is like the two hands part says aging poorly. That's what the hands agree on. And on the left side, the hand is avocados. And on the right side, it's every Paul George quote. So just
avocados defend that tweet. I mean, that's right. It just is what it is, you know? avocados. I also spelled avocados incorrectly in that tweet. So
I did that tweet that. Also, I wasn't going to put you on blast, though.
I did not know
that. That tweet also aged poorly. yes.
Wow, that's so meta.
Yeah. Paul George says a lot of things that kind of end up biting him. I feel like he just says like what he thinks he should say in that moment. The thing is that like moments and situations change like this, and then the things that he says don't really apply. Well, he said Damian Lillard's game winner against him in 2019 was a bad shot. Now it is.
Right.
Like it was like the 30-footer. That is, you know, Dame time.
Yeah.
All the time now, as we know, and he actually took that one back. There are a ton of tweets about, you know, like Thunder for life, yo, and you know, it's just like I get it, man. Like, you know, sometimes you get swept up in the moment, and like, you know, I get that it happens. Like sometimes, like, you know, you can be like in a relationship or something and think that that relationship is going to last like forever, and sometimes they do, and some people I think like get more into the thing that they're doing. And think that that moment is like forever. And I think that's kind of what Paul George does.
Yeah, absolutely.
And honestly, that's why we love him at this point, right? Because
speak for yourself. I mean,
I know
he's inadvertently caused me a lot of pain and a lot of drama. So really I'm going to go with no on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have the last tweet. And it is another quote tweet. So the tweet that she's referencing says, woman shouts, I still love sharks after being attacked by one. And Sierra said, Knicks fans. Incredible.
What? What did I say? Okay.
You said Knicks fans. You said Knicks fans in reference to that tweet.
I guess right now. Maybe not so much in this particular moment, but I feel like it's tough. It's tough being a Knicks fan, man. Like, you're just kind of married to it. And, you know, I'd describe it like a relationship that you know that your friend isn't, like, going to get out of. Like, that's what Knicks fans are, basically. And you just, like, kind of watch them have, like, these brief... Like, this to me is, like, you know, one of those good moments when the relationship where, like, things aren't completely falling apart and they're not like bitching about them all the time.
He's buying you flowers and
exactly this is like the makeup season, like this is the I'm gonna change season. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yes Well, we don't have any more tweets, so that's the end of your line of questioning. It was so fucking lovely to have you on as a guest, and everyone check out Sierra. She writes for Yahoo Sports for the NBA. Where else can people find you?
That's it. Or like, you mean, oh, like my Twitter. Yeah.
That's it. Oh yeah.
My bad. Yeah. Twitter. No, I mean, yes. Yeah. I used to freelance so much. It would be like, you know, but yeah, no, I just write Yahoo.
Right.
Sierra Sohi is my Twitter. So
yes.
Self-explanatory.
Okay, yeah, that does kind of sound like how I pronounce it. I feel relieved.
But yeah, you say it yourself. Good.
I'm like, okay.
I'm serious, yeah.
It's weird because we're internet friends, and like I feel like we're pretty good internet friends, but I've had so few occasions where I needed to say your name out loud because of the nature of how internet friendship works. And it's very weird to be like, I deeply care about you and the trajectory of your life and like want the best for you so much. And yet do not feel confident about saying your name out loud. Like that's just really, that's just the weird nature of like having friends on the internet. Like, I don't know.
It's a relationship weird, I have with like, a lot of
time
people.
To make friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
It's crazy.
It is. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, check her out. Read everything she writes because she's a very gifted writer and has some very, very interesting things to say.
Thank you.